You're ready.
Good morning. I call this meeting of the Public Service Commission to order. It is Wednesday, October 10th at 10:03 a.m. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, and joined by Commissioners Brian Karasius and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. The only opening comments I have, just real briefly to, I guess, acknowledge it. One of the important things that we do here is coal mine reclamation, and we have a bankruptcy from one of the coal mining companies, and just was released yesterday. And so there'll be a lot of work going into that to see what exactly is going to happen with Westmoreland Mining Company. But the release from Westmoreland indicates that they plan to continue their mining operations, and that it's not like the mine is being shut down. It's the Beulah mine that they operate in North Dakota. But from our perspective, I guess one of the important things that I just wanted to throw out there so it's acknowledged publicly is that we have surety bonds, and hopefully the company is able to work through the bankruptcy proceedings and continue operating. But if not, there are surety bonds in place for future reclamation work there. So I just wanted to get that out there. Commissioner Karasius?
Well, just I read the news release on that, and it's a Chapter 11 restructuring. It's not Chapter 7, which would be total bankruptcy. So, as Commissioner Christman said, I'm sure they'll be working diligently to restructure. But I had the opportunity last week. I was in Washington, D.C. I was invited to participate on a panel discussion and related to the state's role in some of the carbon capture initiatives that are happening here at home as well as across the country. And it was a great group of people. It was co-hosted by the Carbon Utilization Research Council as well as the U.S. Department of Energy. So I was pleased to be invited. Good dialogue, good discussion. And one thing I would add, it's good to be back in North Dakota.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Another comment on that. It's really exciting to see all the ways in which the Department of Energy is involved in North Dakota and sending money here to help research and develop the next wave of energy products and energy technologies that are really going to fuel this nation and help us become, you know, energy dominant. So that's really fun to see, and hearing about it more and more. And I think the Energy Department really thinks North Dakota is quite the powerhouse for energy, so that's fun. I just wanted to make one acknowledgement of an item on our admin consent, and that is a motion to accept Wayne Grandgard's retirement. Wayne is going to be leaving us. He's been a large-scale inspector for a number of years with the commission, and he's decided to retire before winter sets in, and he doesn't have to drive his truck around on the icy roads of winter in North Dakota. And he's done a great job for us for many years, and just wanted to acknowledge his good work. He wouldn't let us have any sort of reception or a retirement party. I'm always one that likes to have parties, so that's hard for me. But it's nice to I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge his good work and to thank him and to wish him the best in his retirement.
Your comment, Commissioner, about the Energy Department reminded me of something that I talked about in a different interview yesterday, and I just want to point it out here, too. Monday, we had the energy conference over at Bismarck State College, and at the end of the day, I couldn't help but reflecting back on what we've seen really for years, but especially the last couple months, and then most especially the last couple weeks with political discourse in the country. And after all we've seen around the nation and where legislators are unable to speak because they're shouted down, where there's all kinds of chaos going on, Monday, we had the Assistant Energy Secretary here, and the first panel had both of our U.S. senators and our U.S. congressmen and our lieutenant governor on it. And we went in, and they didn't send a video message. They sat there, faced each other, and faced the audience, made their comments. It was tense at times, no doubt about it. But they made their comments. They took questions from the audience. They were around beforehand for interacting with the people. No cars were burning outside. No windows were broken. There was no chaos at all. No protesters shouting anyone down. And in fact, we walked in there and participated in that without even going through security. I think North Dakota should be awful proud of the way we're able to handle political discourse, even in tense times. So I was awful proud of that day. So with that, we have two items on the consent calendar plus the approval of previous minutes. I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. I move the commission close out contract number AM-797-18 with Wilson Construction Incorporated for completion of construction services at the 2018 Morton County AML Reclamation Project.
Second.
One thing I want to highlight in here, because at my first glance it was confusing, this is one case, AM-18-96, but it involves contract number AM-797-18. The way we code our case numbers, that contract number kind of looked like a case number to me for a while, so just to make sure everyone's clear on that. On May 15th, we entered into a contract with Wilson Construction for the 2018 Morton County AML project. The project involved the elimination of approximately 2,500 feet of high walls in Morton County west of New Salem at two different sites. About 115,000 cubic yards of spoil material was used to backfill the high walls, and 36 acres were reclaimed. Fertilizing, tilling, and mulching was completed on September 18th. We intend to have trees planted at two areas on the Carrick site next year by the Morton County Soil Conservation District. Our project manager, Jordan Burns, and project inspector, James Thornburg, inspected the work throughout the project. Jordan determined that Wilson Construction satisfactorily completed all the work and conditions of the contract. The original contract was for $252,400. The contracted work was completed for a total cost of $228,775. Approximately 9% less than the original contract amount. The contractor certified that all employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for this project have been paid. The final invoice has been submitted and paid, and coming in almost 10% under budget, having the work done in a timely manner. Mentioned the supervising engineers, but I also want to commend Bill Dodd, the supervisor of Abandoned Mine Lands program, for another job well done.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
My second item, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Beck Communications Cooperative designated eligible carrier application case number PU-18-342.
Second.
On September 13th, Beck filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier as a non-incumbent local exchange carrier for purpose of receiving FCC Connect America funding in specified census blocks in rural areas of North Dakota. That you often hear referred to as CAF 2 funding. The issues to be considered in this matter are, one, is the applicant qualified? Two, what support area should be designated? And three, is designation in the public interest? Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by November 21st. And just to very much generalize, because there are a few of these census blocks, I believe, on the east side of the river, for the most part, this area would be west and north of Mandan on the Morton County side, extending up into Oliver County a little bit.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And my last item, I move the commission adopt the order suspending warehouse license number and notice of opportunity to be heard in Forbes Equity Exchange, license number 290, Forbes, North Dakota, suspension case number GE-18-356.
Second.
On July 30th, we received notice that the certificate of insurance on grain issued to Forbes Equity Exchange will be canceled. The effective date of cancellation is November 1st. The Century Code says that we shall immediately suspend the warehouseman's license if the licensee fails to file a replacement insurance certificate at least 30 days before cancellation of the current insurance filing. As of October 3rd, no replacement insurance had been filed with the commission. So we need to take this action to suspend their license. What will happen, assuming that this passes and it's suspended, within 5 days of notice of our action, the Forbes Equity Elevator will need to notify each receipt holder with written notice that its warehouse license is suspended. They will need to keep the commission's suspension notice conspicuously posted. They will be not allowed to receive additional grain for purchase, storage, shipping, or processing, and they will not be allowed to sell any grain without receiving commission authorization to do so, so that we're able to maintain access to those grain assets in case there are ag producers out there that have not been paid.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. I turn it over to you, Commissioner Crashes.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move BK 7, 18-345 up in the agenda to follow BK 3, 18-224.
Okay, without objection, BK, the last motion will be moved up and follow BK 3. Which BK 1 has been withdrawn, if I understand right. So BK 3 is actually the second motion you'll be making.
Right. BK 1 has been withdrawn. So, okay, here's my first one. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company tax reform effects, electric utility rates, case number PU-18-155.
Second.
On October 2nd, 2018, NSP filed a settlement agreement with the Public Service Commission, and this is related to the Commission's January 10th, 2018 order initiating investigation into the rate impact and accounting treatment of the TCJA. Under the agreement, NSP would issue a one-time customer refund of estimated 2018 TCJA savings totaling $9.76 million. Subsequent Tax Cut and Jobs Act savings beyond 2018 would be retained by NSP to offset forecasted 2019 and 2020 revenue deficiencies. NSP agrees to a two-year moratorium against seeking electric base increases during 2019 and 2020. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by November 15th, 2018. For more information, contact the Public Service Commission at 701-328-2400 or 1-800-366-6888. And just a little more detail on that. The income tax reduction from the tax rate change of 35% down to 21% on taxable income is estimated to be approximately $7 million. The deferred income taxes for 2018, the reversible amount attributable to NSP electric operations is also valued at $2.7 million for a total of $9.7 million. And then there's a small balance of non-plant EDIT that would be $211,000. That would actually move it slightly in the other direction. But I take that back. It would also include that. So, again, the settlement provides for a one-time customer refund, a two-year rate moratorium, a lower return on equity allowance, an earnings cap in 2019 and 2020, and an expansion of the renewable rider. And I think this is a good settlement because it prohibits NSP from increasing rates, interim and or final rates prior to 2021, providing two additional years of rate stability and certainty for the customers. When looking at what a likely request for increase would have been otherwise, if they had come in for a rate case, it would be approximately $15 million, even with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act savings. So it creates certainty and prevents rates from going up for customers for a fair amount of time. And staff, in visiting with them, they felt it would be beneficial to pass the savings on to the customers in the form of a one-time refund. That refund would equate to approximately $46, the one-time refund for customers that are using approximately 1,000 kilowatt hours in a month. And one other point that is worth noting, the last rate case for NSP was in 2012. So I think it's a very good settlement. It avoids a rate increase. It freezes rates. And again, certainty is good in addition to the $46 credit that the customers will receive as a part of the TCJA settlement.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just want to make a couple points. First of all, the motion today is just to establish a notice of opportunity for a hearing, so this is not final approval of this. And I mean, there are a lot of components that are being proposed here in that settlement, so I personally want to at least request an informal hearing to talk to the company and the advocacy staff about it and learn more. It might be that there's enough components to this that we might need to actually have a hearing about it to better understand it. Or, I mean, I just have some reservations about making this many decisions, extending that far into the future for NSP based on very little discussion and interaction or formal evidence from the company. So, but I do look forward, and maybe we can add to the admin agenda scheduling of an informal to discuss it.
Is there any further discussion?
Just to add one thing, it underscores, and mentioned this in the past and have been asked, if it was as simple as going from 35 to 21%, that would make these calculations significantly more easy. But when you're talking about deferred income taxes and all the different moving parts, these are very complicated. So I just want to commend staff for the work that they're doing on these cases, because it's difficult. It's not an easy task to dig deep into all of these numbers, and they've been working very hard to do that. So I really appreciate the effort, Jerry, Victor, and everyone else, if you're listening.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, next would be BK3. I move the commission adopt the order issuing Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity number 5922 in Dakota Natural Gas, LLC, Natural Gas System, Drayton, North Dakota, North Dakota Public Convenience and Necessity case number PU-18-224.
Second.
On June 28, 2018, Dakota Natural Gas filed an application for a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity to construct and operate a natural gas system to serve the communities of Drayton, North Dakota, and an application for protection of information as well. On July 9, 2018, the North Dakota Public Service Commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, providing until August 31, 2018, for receiving written comments or requests for hearing. No response or request for hearing was received. DNG is a limited liability company organized under the laws of North Dakota, created to deliver gas to the Drayton area. DNG is a wholly owned subsidiary of Great Minnesota Transmission, LLC, a Minnesota limited liability company. This proposal is to construct and operate a distribution system serving the city of Drayton, as mentioned, and a large commercial customer adjacent to the city, which would be American Crystal Sugar. The distribution system would begin at an interconnection with the Viking Natural Gas Transmission Line near Donaldson, Minnesota. Total cost of the distribution system is estimated to be $3.74 million. And one other point to note is that DNG is seeking approval of a Henshaw exemption from FERC for a local distribution company serving an interstate pipeline. So we would be the ones who would regulate the rates on that service to Drayton and, of course, American Crystal Sugar as well. Right now, DNG is anticipating approximately 200 customers in the proposed service territory that would be created within the first 12 months of operation. They have another additional 25% capacity available as well after those 200 customers have been added to the system, and it is up to the customers to make that decision. DNG estimates that service will save residential customers between $500 and $1,000 per year and businesses 20 to 40% per year. And another point that's worth noting, there are no other public utilities serving or providing similar natural gas service in the Drayton area. So this is, we've talked about it before, this is really, really a good thing for consumers, for households. It's a good thing for industry. And there's always some degree of displacement right now. The fuel sources being utilized are coal, propane, and in some cases wood for those homes that have fireplaces or wood burners. But this is a significant savings for customers, and again, that will be a choice that they will have to make ultimately in terms of converting their propane furnace, for example, over to a natural gas-fired furnace. But it's one more step in expanding the natural gas infrastructure in the state, and I think it's a very good thing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'll just mention that this is the second extension of natural gas into a small community within the last year or so. The other one being Gwinner, and that was to serve Bobcat. And in both cases, the anchor tenant, a large anchor tenant, was sort of the key to making it happen. So I think we're seeing that's one of the most important ingredients for getting natural gas out to some of these smaller communities that don't have it, is having a good, strong anchor industrial tenant that can justify the cost of the pipeline extension. As Brian said, it's significant cost savings. It also is a big boon to the economic development in those communities. There are a fair number of big businesses, industrial-type businesses, that require natural gas and will only consider natural gas or communities that have natural gas service. And so this is an exciting development for this community, and I think it bodes well for that whole region up there, and we might be able to see some additional communities being served in the same manner or as an extension from this down the road.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, the next on the agenda for me is the one that was moved up, BK7. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Dakota Natural Gas LLC, Natural Gas Service, Drayton, North Dakota, tariff and rates, case number PU-18-345.
Second.
On September 12, 2018, Dakota Natural Gas filed an application for approval of a new tariff and rate schedule for its proposed service in Drayton, North Dakota, as mentioned, and for the large commercial customer as well. The issues to be considered in this matter are: what is the value of DNG's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? What is DNG's rate of return on its property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? What is a just and reasonable rate? What rates and changes are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate? And are DNG's proposed rate schedules designed in such a manner that they result in a basis of charge to its customers that is just and reasonable without discrimination? Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by November 26, 2018. And the numbers again, I should add, if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. For more information, the Public Service Commission's contact information is 701-328-2400 or 1-800-366-6888. And just a couple of, in terms of the proposed rates that DNG is putting forth, base rates for residential homes would be $8.50. Small businesses would be $10, large commercial would be $100, and then there would be a distribution charge that would be 46 cents per 100 cubic feet for residential, 41 cents for small business, and 37.5 cents for large commercial.
We have a motion, a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just to be on notice, I guess, I may ask for the hearing on this one. We have a new product in a new area being served by a new company that is not only not done business in North Dakota before as a utility service, but is not a subsidiary or anything of an existing utility either. And so I just am undecided on that, whether it's something that we should do from here, or and also the fact that they're a long ways from here. So it would be inconvenient if someone had objections to the to the rates being proposed or something like that to expect them to be here easily either. It's a long ways away, so I'm a little unsure of my own opinion of whether we should be having a hearing and doing a little more public outreach on this one. So but I am certainly in favor of getting the time started on the notice of opportunity, so I intend to support the motion.
Yeah. And one thing again to I guess emphasize, this is customers will have the choice as to whether or not to subscribe to the service or not subscribe to the service, just so we're clear on that.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission, Master Construction Company, Incorporated, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-18-298.
Second.
This, we received a one-call complaint on July 30th of 2018, alleging a violation by Master Construction Company of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 49-23, one-call excavation notice system. We sent a letter on July 31st, 2018 to Master Construction enclosing the complaint. On August 13th, 2018, Master Construction filed a response to the complaint, and on September 24th, 2018, the Public Service Commission Advocacy Staff and Master Construction filed a consent agreement for the resolution of the complaint. The complaint alleges violations by Master Construction of Century Code, as mentioned, for failure to conduct an excavation in a careful and prudent manner. They hit a 5/8 inch polyethylene natural gas service line while grading with a skid steer or a skid loader, resulting in approximately $756 of damage. One customer was affected by the incident. North Dakota Century Code provides that to avoid damage and to minimize interference, a ticket holder shall conduct the excavation in a careful and prudent manner. Under the consent agreement, Master Construction agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $2,000. And I think it's worth noting that the damage number, again, was $756. The fine is $2,000. So when you compare that, of course, those two numbers, it's definitely a little stiffer fine. But this is the third time Master Construction has, if I've got the number right, they're a three-time offender of the one-call excavation notice Century Code law. So they're primarily a Minnesota company. They typically do work in the Fargo area, but again, it's sending hopefully a very clear message that that you've got to be careful out there. There are significant damages that can occur that might result in injury or even loss of life when you're talking about natural gas. And we read about these situations, unfortunately, from time to time across the country where people are killed because of a gas leak that was caused by not excavating in a careful and prudent manner. So can't stress this enough, and I would certainly hope to not see Master Construction come across our desk in this fashion again.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. BK5, I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement in Public Service Commission, Craig Sewer, Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-18-311. Second. And I do apologize if I mispronounced the last name. On August 28, 2018, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint alleging a violation by Mr. Sewer of North Dakota Century Code Chapter 49-23. And the violation is failure to contact the notification center and provide an excavation or location notice at least 48 hours before beginning the work that was done. The complaint did not identify any damage to an underground facility. And in simple terms, this was a agricultural producer that was ditching and did not get a ticket to do so. When you're out during agricultural activity, there's an exemption on one-call ticket if the activity does not create any tillage below a depth of 18 inches. So 18 inches is the threshold. Some of the things that would require a one-call ticket would be core sampling of soil, for example, where that core sample might be to a depth of 4 feet at times. Or tiling would be another example of needing a one-call ticket because, again, that's deeper than 18 inches, and there are a lot of facilities that could potentially be hit. You sometimes think, well, it's in the middle of a field, and it's not likely that anything would be out there, and most farmers know their land like the back of their hand. But the possibility does exist. So the gentleman was very good to work with, according to staff, very cooperative. And as a result of that, Mr. Sewer is being assessed a civil penalty of $500, but that civil penalty is suspended on the condition that he commits no further violations of the North Dakota One Call law within 5 years of the date of this order approving the consent agreement. And again, very, very good to work with. And it's probably not something that's always top of mind, but as I was talking to staff, things that, you know, we can certainly do better on our end is potentially coordinating with both Farm Bureau, Farm Union, for Farmers Union, for example, and getting that type of information in their newsletters, if they would be willing to do that. So I'm not trying to put them on the spot here, but it goes back to communication, because a lot of times producers don't realize that even going out and getting soil samples would require a one-call ticket. So I appreciate his willingness to work, and again, very, very cooperative.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and my final item, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2019 rates, case number PU-18-329.
Second.
On August 31st, 2018, Otter Tail Power Company filed an annual update under its Transmission Facility Cost Recovery Rider Tariff. The proposed rate update for 2019 includes the impacts of case number PU-17-398. And in that case, the rate case, 16 transmission projects were shifted from the transmission cost recovery rider to base rates. The cost of three new transmission projects, updated electric transmission expense with offsetting revenues and a true-up from amount from the current rates was also factored in. The adjustment to the transmission cost recovery rider would be effective for bills rendered on and after January 1st of 2019, and they are as follows. They all result in a decrease for large general service, a decrease of 0.519 cents, almost 52 cents. Controlled service would be 0.0029, and these are based on kilowatt hour usage. Lighting service goes down just a little bit, and all other service would go down 0.0173 per kilowatt hour. And so what does that mean for a typical customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours per month? And it would be approximately $1.73 that their utility bills will decrease by when all of those things are rolled up. So again, this is a notice of opportunity for hearing on those numbers and other components. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by November 14th, 2018. And again, if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And our number one more time, the telephone numbers are 701-328-2400 or 1-800-366-6888.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest, and finding the cases involve similar questions of law or fact, I move the commission consolidate for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04, Emmons-Logan Wind LLC, Emmons-Logan Wind Energy Center, Emmons and Logan Siting Application, case number PU-18-280, and Emmons-Logan Wind LLC, Emmons-Logan 230 kV Transmission Line, Emmons Siting Application, case number PU-18-281. I further move the commission deem the applications complete, conditioned on receipt at least 30 days prior to the hearing of sound and shadow flicker analysis with detail on residents' locations and participating non-participating landowners,
Class 3 cultural resource surveys, and 3 wetland delineation reports, and issue a notice of filings and consolidated hearing in Edmonds Logan Wind LLC, Edmonds Logan Wind Energy Center, Edmonds Logan Siting Application Case Number PU-18-280, and Edmonds Logan Wind LLC, Edmonds Logan 230 KV Transmission Line, Edmonds Siting Application Case Number PU-18-281.
Second.
Thank you for seconding the tongue twister.
I'm glad we don't have a tradition of the chair reading back the motion.
A consolidated public hearing on the applications in these cases is scheduled for December 7th, 2018 at 10 a.m. at the Emmons County Courthouse Auditorium in Linton. On July 19th, Emmons Logan Wind filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility to construct a 298.1 megawatt Emmons Logan Wind Energy Center consisting of up to 123 wind turbine generators and associated facilities in Emmons and Logan counties, North Dakota. Also on July 19th, Emmons Logan Wind filed combined applications for a corridor certificate and route permit to construct approximately 6.85 miles of 230 kV electric transmission line and associated facilities in Emmons and Logan counties, North Dakota. The issue to be considered in the application for certificate of site compatibility are whether the proposed locations and facilities will produce minimal adverse effect on the environment and welfare of citizens. Are the facilities compatible with environmental preservation and efficient use of resources, and whether the proposed facility locations will minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion. So we'll be heading down to Linton for a hearing on December 7th on this project and look forward to good participation from folks in that area and the company and any interested agencies on this matter then.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
My second motion, I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Langdon Wind LLC, Langdon Renewables LLC, transfer of site certificate citing application case number PU-18-336.
Second.
If this feels like deja vu, it kind of is, because we just did a notice of this on September 26th. But the notice we issued on September 26th set a October 22nd deadline for filing comments and requests for hearing regarding this application. And due to the publication requirements, the September 26th notice could not be published in the required newspapers in sufficient time to meet the October 22nd filing deadline. Consequently, we are issuing the second notice, and comments and requests for hearing on this notice must be received by November 5th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just kudos to whoever caught it. We want to do things by the book. I talk a lot about doing things promptly and quickly around here, not dragging things out for years like you see in Washington, D.C. so often. But quickly doesn't mean neglecting our responsibilities. And in this case, our responsibility is to have a certain amount of notice time. And whatever happened there, it got caught. And so we're going to make sure that we do that. So appreciate whoever caught that.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I move the commission adopt the order on recommended decision granting motion to dismiss complainants/petitioners complaint with a clarification and correction in ELPC and DRC versus Meridian Energy Group Energy Conversion Facility Davis Refinery complaint case number PU-18-223.
Second.
Okay. So the commission, this issue has been going on at the commission for a number of months when the complaint was filed by the several groups, the DRC and another group back earlier this spring and early summer. And we've had a number of filings back and forth. About a month ago, we asked an ALJ to provide an analysis and a recommended order, and this order today basically approves the order on the recommended decision that the ALJ has provided to us. We also clarify that the consistent with the policy of the commission that we can ensure minimal adverse effects on the environment and the welfare of citizens, the commission may, of its own volition, investigate and inquire into the actions of persons in pursuit of compliance. And this is related to NDCC 49-22.1-20, subsection 1 and 5. This is a matter upon which the complaint is filed, or the matter upon which the complaint is filed has been the subject of commission monitoring for a good number of years. And so we just wanted to clarify the proposed order with that information. And so the commission orders that the administrative law judge's September 10th recommended decision granting the motion to dismiss the complainant/petitioner's complaint is adopted as the Public Service Commission's decision granting Meridian Energy Group, Inc.'s motion to dismiss. And we also want to clarify that proposed finding of fact number 4 is corrected to state when plans to increase the facility to 50,000 barrels per day or beyond are implemented, that plan subjects the entire facility to the review and approval process. So, like I said, this has been going on for a number of months. We had a work session a couple weeks ago, and I just want to restate some of the comments I made in that work session relating to this matter. So the legislature created the Siting Act to provide orderly development of energy resources while having minimal adverse human and environmental impact. And in that law, they provided definitions for projects which in effect, declare the point at which the minimal adverse impact cannot be assumed. So, in other words, they developed thresholds for projects. Not every project has to be cited, only projects that meet certain thresholds. That threshold for oil refineries is 50,000 barrels per day. After that point, a permit is required that requires the companies to provide environmental analysis, cultural resource studies, public hearings, etc. Under that point, minimal environmental impact is assumed. They further clarified in the law that when an addition causes a total facility to be jurisdictional, and then approval is needed. They could have directed that if additional stages are anticipated on the front end by the company, then a permit is required on the front end, but that's not how the law is written. We've seen this type of staggered development for years, especially in relation to gas plants, but some in relation to pipelines and also in relation to generation facilities. Policymakers haven't changed the requirement as it relates to this. And the threshold for this project, a crude oil refinery, is 50,000 barrels per day. The company provided sworn statements that it intends to be at 49,500 barrels per day. That's below the jurisdictional threshold. They have further clarified that they don't intend to expand beyond that threshold, but yet that they plan to operate at that 49,500 threshold for indefinitely. So, you know, this is a close call. It's a tough call. All the indications suggest that the company is developing plans to avoid the additional regulatory scrutiny required of a siting permit. And the CEO, Bill Prentice, said as much in a meeting with us last fall. But the fact remains that the PSC is a regulatory body and we must have subject matter jurisdiction to preside over any matter. That jurisdiction is developed or derived from the Constitution and the laws, and the bright line on the law as it relates to this is 50,000 barrels per day. I want to read from the order which we're adopting. I want to read a little bit from the judge's order. He restates a quote from the U.S. Supreme Court that says, judges should not waste their time in the mental acrobatics needed to decide whether an agency's interpretation of a statutory provision is jurisdictional or non-jurisdictional. Once those labels are sheared away, it becomes clear that the question in every case is simply whether the statutory text of the law forecloses the agency's assertion of authority or not. And then he writes again, by virtue of the plain language in Chapter 4922.1, the legislature clearly articulated that a refinery capable of refining less than 50,000 barrels per day is not subject to the PSC's siting jurisdiction under the statute, and a person may construct such a refinery without a certificate of site compatibility from the commission. Petitioners have not cited North Dakota statutory authority permitting an expansion of PSC's siting authority to search out or speculate as to such ulterior motives or intentions. So it's for these reasons that I feel that the judge's order is appropriate and that I am prepared to support his order to grant the motion to dismiss the complaint.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Yes, I saw someone taking notes quickly with the correction. And so I just want to highlight what that was. In the judge's proposed findings of fact, it had to do with when plans to increase the facility beyond 49,500 barrels per day are implemented, that plan subjects the entire facility to review and approval process. But it's actually not 49.5, and so this correction changes that to 50,000 barrels per day or more. And so that was just the correction there. I also want to say that it's going to be very tempting for people to make this decision into something that it is not. This case has made a lot of headlines over these last few months and has been discussed at length by many people because it is interesting, it is heartfelt, and it is vitally important to a lot of people. And much of that interest and discussion has revolved around a decision that is not being made with this motion. I'm reminded of a different quote from a Supreme Court justice when ruling on a jurisdictional case involving the EPA, and that judge said, however much we might sympathize or agree with the EPA's policy objectives, EPA may act only within the boundaries of its statutory authority. I think that really fits this situation that we face today. Our responsibility is not to rewrite the laws as we wish they were. The Commission's task is to make our decisions within the boundaries of our statutory authority. The thresholds for energy infrastructure siting are not lost upon the legislators. Believe me, I was one for 18 years, and siting thresholds have been looked at many times. Much discussion has occurred in recent years about gathering pipelines being transitioned into jurisdictional transmission lines after installation. Some have even alleged that certain developers have taken advantage of a loophole in the law. But the legislature has chosen not to make changes there. But a few sessions ago, discussion occurred about wind farms being built just under the siting threshold to avoid siting. And in that case, the legislature took action and lowered the threshold. So they will respond when they choose to. And when a new refinery was announced just a few years ago, also along the interstate and near the Theodore Roosevelt National Park, I'm sure many legislators considered whether the threshold for refineries should be changed, but it was not. The threshold for refineries was left at 50,000 barrels per day. So let's be clear. Our decision today is not about whether or not the Davis refinery is extremely close to the 50,000 barrel per day threshold, because the law says nothing about being close. It either is or it is not over the threshold. And our decision today is not about whether this is an appropriate location to construct a refinery. The law says nothing about the appropriateness of non-jurisdictional facilities. Our decision today is about one thing, and that is whether or not the Davis refinery meets the threshold set by the legislature for PSC jurisdiction. And there is no evidence that the developer's current plan exceeds the legal threshold. The chairman and CEO of Meridian has sworn under oath that their current plan is for a facility that is designed for and capable of refining no more than 49,500 barrels per day, which is to be constructed in a single phase, and that there are no current plans for any addition or expansion. If that turns out to be untrue, there could be significant legal consequences, but the law gives this commission no authority to predict that result. So upon reviewing all the filings, this commission does not have legal authority to compel Meridian Energy Group to seek a siting certificate.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Couple of announcements here. Tomorrow, right? Yeah. It's coming fast. October 11th, tomorrow at 9 o'clock is a formal hearing on case number PU-17-120. That's Northern States Power Company. It's an advanced determination for 1,550 megawatts of wind generation. I believe that's like seven wind farms. Don't quote me on the seven part of it. And also, combined with that, case number PU-17-372, again, Northern States Power, advanced determination and prudence again, for the 302.4 megawatt Dakota Range Wind project. That hearing is also scheduled for Friday to be continued at 9 o'clock again. It's possible that it will be wrapped up tomorrow, but we have reserved both days in case they are needed. I'll jump ahead. Our next regular commission meeting is on Wednesday, October 24th at 10 o'clock, as might be expected. I'm going to jump ahead a little further because two things that are somewhat of anomalies. Our next regular scheduled meeting after that one, and I only announce as far ahead because it's not on a Wednesday, it will be Thursday, November 8th. At 10 o'clock here. So keep that in mind if you're planning out ahead, Thursday, November 8th. But in between then and now, on November 1st at 10 a.m., we have a formal hearing in Castleton, North Dakota. This is for case number PU-18-219, the Harmony Solar siting application. That, again, will be at the Days Inn and Governor's Conference Center in Castleton, North Dakota. We've had them before. We have not had a lot of siting hearings in Castleton, and so we look forward to seeing people there. That concludes my announcements. Commission will stand in recess and reconvene about 10 minutes after questions from the press. So we are in recess, and we'll take questions from the press.
So I just wanted to make sure on the Davis order. So basically you adopted the administrative law judge's order with the exception of proposed finding of fact number 4 was amended. Is that
correct?
I understand that right?
Yep.
Okay.
And another clarification that we can give you the exact order so you have all of it. But
yeah. Okay. And going to a totally, unless you had a question on that, different topic. On Excel, the refund, when are you expecting taking up final approval of that, roughly?
Well, the...
Pardon, Jerry?
So we're in a notice period.
Yeah. Get through the notice period, I think.
November 15th is the notice, so that would be the soonest where we would be able to.
Yeah, November 15th, we'll have to get past that point to see if any comments or
requests
for a hearing should come in.
Okay. When's the earliest, like, an Xcel customer could expect to get that refund? Is that...
Typically, pardon, Jerry?
Probably next year.
Yeah, it would get into 2019 a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, the company has to go through and do the final calculations. And one thing about utility bills, just a billing cycle itself, they've got bills going out every single day. So it depends on where you land with your billing cycle.
Right.
That influences a little bit whether you're billed on the 2nd of the month or the 27th of the month. But hopefully they can get – we'll have to get through the comment period, I guess, before I
– Sure. So what you did today was just issue a notice. If the public wants to have a hearing, they can request one. But are you for sure going to have, like, an informal or formal hearing amongst yourselves on that deal as Commissioner Fedorchuk requested?
Yeah, if a commissioner requests an informal, we certainly have an informal.
Okay.
I'm assuming we'll try to schedule one during our, or at least throw out some dates during our admin portion of the meeting, and then see if they work with the company so we can settle on a time. And we can do that before the comment period runs out.
Okay.
We'd still wait for the comment period to expire, but.
And so in a hearing, informal hearing like that, you'd have people from the company and staff and yourselves, and you'd kind of hash it out and talk through the agreement kind of deal?
Correct.
Okay. One last question. On the Linton wind farm, I just did a quick check, and it looked like that was about 298 megawatts.
Correct.
I mean, that seems pretty large.
Big one. Yeah. Okay. Yep. 300 megawatts is about the largest single facility that we've seen. I think we permitted another one that was 300, and then maybe there was an adjacent one close to it. I forget, the one by Valley City, which hasn't been constructed. But we have facilities that are combined and were permitted in stages, like the Bison 4 is, I think, 600 megawatts total, all in one pretty much contiguous site. But this is a sizable facility.
Right, and it's a new facility. It's not an expansion.
Correct.
Okay, and they're proposing to do this all-in-one permit, the 298?
That's what the plans are now, yeah.
Okay.
You know, one challenge of any of these projects, whether it's a refinery, whether it's a gas processing plant, whether it's a wind farm, one thing that's becoming more pronounced in North Dakota is that these facilities are winding up in someone's backyard, as they always will. When you look at crude oil production, that backyard prior to the Bakken really taking off was in Texas, it was overseas, it was somewhere else. But you can't avoid that if we still want to enjoy the modern conveniences and these various energy types we're reliant on as not only a state but as a country to power businesses, heat and light homes, move industry forward. So you get into a number of situations where it's the adjacent property owner, or if it's adjacent to another type of another entity that people hold near and dear, it creates a challenge. I think Commissioner Christman summed it up as well when he was speaking about it. And I probably should have offered some of these comments, when the motion was prior to being voted on. But it's a tough place to in terms of location. It's a challenging location for a number of reasons. But the law is the law, and it hasn't changed since Meridian came in last December and visited with the commission.
Mm-hmm.
The threshold law was the same then as it is today. That has not changed one bit. I think the tone, maybe some people may feel that that has changed,
right?
Because I've been asked. But for me, it was always very black and white in terms of the threshold, and that really wasn't. When you look at all of the facilities that are going in across North Dakota, we just have to be honest. The biggest issue with the Meridian Refinery is location. It's proximity to the national park. So then that brings into question the threshold, but is that more of a mechanism to alter development of a particular project on a particular site? And I can't answer that, but it begs the question.
Yeah. So I understand that the thresholds are out of your power. That's the legislature. But, I mean, do you think the legislature should take another look at those thresholds and for them?
I think that I fully expect this to be a matter in the next legislative session. I've already heard talking about people bringing forward bills. And, you know, this is the first refinery project that has even bubbled up to be questionable within our jurisdiction since we've been here. So I don't have a lot of experience with thresholds when it comes to refining. So I think this is a good time to have this discussion. What's involved? Is a 50,000 barrel per day threshold, is that appropriate? What are the differences between a, you know, 45 and a 55? You know, all of these sorts of questions that go into setting a threshold are ripe for discussion and I think an analysis, and I look forward to that during the legislative session. And I don't have an opinion right now. I think it's a good discussion to have, and I will be prepared to be part of that during the legislative session and be helpful to that process. I think it's also important to keep in mind that despite the fact that this isn't within our threshold, this permit or this project has been permitted by several other entities, so it isn't an unpermitted project. The health department had extensive permitting for an extensive permitting process for the air quality permit that included a lot of public input, and the local conditional use permit. They looked at a lot of things, including the view shed and you know what would be the impact in the park and those sorts of issues, and then they still don't have their water permit, so the project is not even fully capable of being operational without a water permit. And I don't know the status of that, but I know it's a fairly complicated process. They talked about that when they were in here last fall, getting the water. So there's still steps that remain in the existing permitting process with the agencies that do have jurisdiction.
You have to realize that when you're talking about a greenfield refinery project, you've got the refinery just outside of Dickinson, this proposed project. I honestly don't know of any other greenfield refineries that have been built. Maybe there are, but I think it dates back to the 70s in terms of time frame, and I'd have to double check that. But these laws have been on the books in North Dakota for an extended period of time, and I was talking with legal counsel. They thought it might be back in the 70s as well, at a time when no one could comprehend what would happen out in western North Dakota in terms of the Bakken technology to extract oil from shale. Technological advances, I don't know that anyone could have predicted that what was going to happen out there was going to happen. So it's changed the landscape, and that does create challenges. But at the same time, it creates economic opportunities for the state. So again, I don't know that this is as much about the threshold limits as it is about the location of the facility. Mm-hmm. I think it's,
But to further expand on that, the
that's the whole point of siting, is the location and discussing the location of these facilities. So that's where the thresholds need to be carefully considered and appropriate for accomplishing what they're intended to accomplish, which is, you know, an environmental and cultural resource review when it's necessary. And I think that's what the legislature will discuss. And maybe this is a perfect threshold. Maybe it is accurate. I think it's a good discussion to have and look forward to it.
Yeah, it does get to be a slippery slope in terms of impact to private property rights as well. But, yeah, understandably, it will likely be a topic of conversation in the upcoming session.
I think, John, one thing that weighs into legislators' decisions on something like a threshold, and I'm going to contrast here, you know, what Brian just said about not being a lot of refineries built is my understanding too. And so I think with refineries, it's kind of choosing an amount and then building something new for whatever size you want to be. So I'm thinking that if the legislature said, oh, it should be a little lower, so we'd capture this, and they set it at 40,000, if the next one wanted to avoid that, they'd build it at 39.5. And so it's tough to draw a line. Now, here's what I was going to say was a contrast to that. In the last 6 years, at some point, there were a number of natural gas-fired peaking plants brought into the state. And I never sensed that it was to avoid the siting threshold, which for those is 50 megawatts. It's natural gas peaking plants have become kind of an off-the-shelf commodity, and they were buying these, and they come in 45 megawatts. Now, someone could look at someone bringing forth a proposal to add a 45-megawatt energy facility and say, oh, they're, you know, avoiding the siting threshold. But like I say, I think that was because that is the size that was available. It happens to be just under the threshold. But with refineries, because they're so rarely built, I don't think that's the case. And I think if the legislature decides to take it up, we will make good expert witnesses to explain to them what the siting process entails and what it's like, and they'll have to make a decision. But I expect whatever they set, if someone were to construct another one in approximately that size category, that they would likely build it less than whatever they set.
The beauty of this being a focus of legislative discussion is that the legislature reflects the people. And people have strong feelings about this. We've all heard about this a lot over the course of the last few months and last year. And so it should be something that can be discussed through that process and the people's views reflected ultimately. It does have private property implications. It does have implications to industry. It has implications to everybody living in North Dakota. And so that's a proper forum for working through all of those issues and coming up with what is the policy for the state on these, how do we want to pursue this type of project in the future, and how do we want to use the siting tool to help support that.
Anything else?
One real technical question. The motion for the cease and desist order, is that just incorporated in your vote, or does that not need a vote because it's moot?
Correct.
Because it's moot?
Yep.
Okay.
Right, Alana? Yeah, I mean, once we... We're
doing something with the recommended order.
With the cease and desist as well? I thought that one was...
It's my understanding, but Jack's not here to...
Right. I don't think that was related to the cease and desist. I thought that was related to the opening and the that was related to the additional.
I've been working on something else.
Yeah.
The last hour. Sorry.
So the cease and desist would only be, we don't have to take action on that. My understanding is we don't take action on that because we have granted the motion to dismiss. So
that
becomes a moot point.
Too, that it's moot.
Yeah.
It's not jurisdictional to us, so we can't cease and desist them.
Just one very brief question on this. Since their nameplate capacity is 49.5, and you said if it goes over the 50,000 threshold, then they may face penalties. Who regulates that? Do you know?
Well, my understanding is, it'd probably be a state's attorney there. Someone would prosecute a law violation. But, of course, complaints could come to this commission, and the commission could help pursue that complaint, I believe. Looking over at legal staff to see if they would disagree with that, but I would that's how I would imagine that to be.
It's noted in the order, the point you're referring to. If Meridian operates a facility above the statutory threshold without a siting permit, or if Meridian files for a site certificate, does not have an appropriate showing of a previous design limitation, the project and company may be subject to criminal or civil action. Even if that wasn't in, that would still hold true. But it was emphasized in the order.
But is the company then required to monitor? How would the evidence get out? I'm just curious, if you know.
The evidence that they're operating
that they're operating above 50,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, we would typically, in the past, those types of issues would come to us in a complaint. So somebody would have to have some evidence that they believe that they're operating at higher than that threshold, and then that could be filed with us and we could review it and proceed from there. We don't have enforcement staff out there doing this type of work, though. That's not something that we have.
Given that it's a private company, how would somebody get that evidence?
I can't begin to estimate. I don't know if there's ways that you can figure out how much is being produced and shipped out, or I don't know exactly how that would occur, Blake, but that's what's envisioned in the law.
I will tell you where we work more directly or more frequently over the years. If you look at our coal plants, you go to the EIA, it tells you exactly what their output is every month, every year. You can go back a long, long time. I'm sure these other energy infrastructure projects like this are that's publicly available knowledge too, I'm certain.
And pardon me if I miss this, but the complaint would have to be made through the courts rather than to you?
I think it could happen both ways. You could take it to the courts or here. Am I wrong, Alana?
You could take it to the courts. You could file something here. The company itself might file for a siting application, as others have when something's become jurisdictional. And we have even in the past had situations where by that application, this has been some time, the commission then went back to figure out if there had been a violation previously that no one brought to anyone's attention or that no one knew about. So it can happen several different ways. And it could happen in a criminal violation, health departments, requirements. There's many possibilities.
One more time around. Okay, we will reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting at 11:30.